You're listening to Weekend from the BBC World Service. I'm Audrey Brown, and I have two guests, as is the practice here on Weekend. They will be with us until 8:30 when the programme ends. Stephanie Baker is a senior writer at Bloomberg News in London, and Adeolu Adekola is a Nigeria policy and development analyst, usually based in Lagos, but currently studying here in the UK. Adeolu, we're going to discuss with you the presidential election in Nigeria later this month. It's happening on the 25th of February. But first, let's talk about something that concerns the whole population of 210 million people, and that is electricity supply, or lack thereof. Nigerian households and businesses are at the mercy of a very unreliable and unstable electricity supply. So they depend on Chinese and Lebanese-made generators. And it's an irony not lost on anyone that one of the top 10 suppliers of fossil fuels in the world can't ensure a reliable source of electricity and relies instead on very, very noisy generators. This is the sound you can hear across Nigeria. Now imagine that sound multiplied a million times all day, every day. Nigerians want to know why successive governments have failed to achieve a stable electricity supply. Nduka Orinjumo is a BBC reporter based in the capital, Abuja. He recently travelled to River State in southern Nigeria to examine this issue. So how long has this been going on for?
It's been going on forever. That would be since independence in 1960 at least. Most Nigerians have never experienced stable electricity in their lifetime. And that's a problem that's countrywide. So it doesn't matter if you live in the villages, you know, in most parts of the country, if you live in the big cities like Lagos or Port Harcourt or Kano, there's unstable electricity all over the country.
And essentially the way people solve it is by using generators, or do they use other sources as well?
Mostly generators, because those are affordable. There's this China-made generator. It's quite small. They call it locally here, I pass my neighbor. It's like, oh, I'm better than my neighbor. But recently, those who are better off have invested in solar panels who will be able to supplement what they get from the national grid. But you find most Nigerians own a power generator in their homes.
You just said there is a national grid as well. So people are still paying for electricity off a national grid that they don't necessarily get. How much power do they get from the grid? Or how many hours a day would you say?
It's difficult to gauge across the country, but I mean, if I use myself in Abuja, in the capital, I get average 10 hours per day, and that's better than what most people get in most parts of the country. On the other hand, most people in the villages can't even afford to pay for electricity because they don't have meters, so they have not been metered by the electricity companies.
How much does it cost you to get this 10 hours a day? And is it sort of 10 continuous hours so you can rely on it from, say, 8 o'clock to 6 o'clock or something? Or does it come and go?
It actually comes and goes. As we are speaking now, I don't have power supply. It went about an hour, 30 minutes ago, it went off. You get this on and off as the companies go through this load shedding. So they take from one area of town, they give to some other part of town. And that's how we go about our business. And the major complaint of the companies is that the government does not let them charge a market reflective cost for electricity. I pay 15,000 naira every 3 weeks, around £26.
Okay, so about $30.
For big business, they use the bigger generators and they need to buy diesel. And the price has gone up 5 times in Nigeria in the last year, and it's made the price of things to go up.
You've told us that this has been going on since independence, essentially. I've known it as a feature of Lagos life that people use generators ever since I've known about Lagos. Is it ever an election issue?
It's been an election issue every 4 years. It's almost like a sing song for the politicians. You know, we are going to provide you stable electricity. The current administration, led by President Muhammadu Buhari, when he was seeking office in 2015, he promised 20,000 megawatts of electricity, which he hasn't fulfilled. In fact, we have witnessed a drop, you know, from the highs of around 6,000 megawatts before he took office. We now generate, you know, and distribute around 4,500 megawatts of electricity. So it's a big issue now for the front runners who are seeking to replace him. But what's interesting this time is that they now recognize that they need to diversify the sector, encourage more private sector partnership with the public side of it to get things working. The truth is, if you speak to most Nigerians, they are not convinced when politicians make promises. Electricity is one of the things that people just feel that at some point will be fixed, but no one expects that the current crop of politicians who are vying for offices have what it takes to fix the problem. One thing that most people have realized is that to fix the challenge of electricity in Nigeria, prices need to go up.
You actually went to look at businesses operating in River State in southern Nigeria. We are talking about small businesses here. How do they actually deal with this?
They use power generators where they can, and where they can't afford that, they just wait for whenever the power comes on, which for some of them, that would be at night. I spoke to this dry cleaner, has a small laundry business, and he said, look, he has to wake up at 2 a.m., 3 a.m. when the power is restored so he can iron clothes, he can wash clothes with the washing machine. So they have been battling these challenges for years now, and many of them have found ways to adapt.
And that's Nduka Orjimo, a BBC reporter based in the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Adeolu, did you get a sense of PTSD when you heard the generator there at the top of our program of this item?
Well, I mean,
can hear the frustration.
I can write a full book. I mean, and I've written in public. Published write-ups, because I actually worked, one of the work I did before I came into the UK was around the electricity sector. What he has said is actually the picture, but I would like to also just also intersect it with development and inequality, which essentially there is an energy inequality in Nigeria. And based on what he also said, about 43% thereabout of the Nigerian population is not on the national grid. So you have a population of 210 million, like you referenced, and about 85 million of them do not have access. That's the first problem. So there is already some people that have been left behind. Now, those that have access, based on what he said, they don't have regular electricity. And so the development side of it too is, I mean, what he said is he spends about 15,000 naira, which is about $30 a month to pay for electricity of about 10 hours a day. However, the minimum wage in the country, and that's the inequality, the minimum wage is 30,000. So if only on electricity alone, somebody who is on the minimum wage is spending half of their earnings just to access 10 hours of electricity per day, then that paints a full picture of
right.
The inequalities.
And of course, the health inequalities kick in as well, right?
Exactly.
Because people's health is very badly affected by this. Now, he said that, all three leading candidates, in the election, it was a question that I asked, how is it not a burning election question? Is it a burning election question this year?
It's a burning election question. However, it's also due to years of promises that has been, there's a lack of trust, essentially. So there are about 18 candidates for the presidential election in Nigeria coming up February 25. However, there are three leading ones. Actually, there used to be two, the two big parties. However, last year when he was a former vice presidential candidate under the opposition party. So he left the party and he became quite popular.
You're talking about Peter Obi.
Peter Obi, yes.
Right, and he's been campaigning very hard on social media especially. But has he made any particular promises that would make people believe him rather than the other two candidates who belong to the more traditional parties?
Across all the manifestos, I've tried to glance through them. Yes, there are promises on improved electricity. He also referenced the current president promising 20,000 megawatts, but the scale of it is, I mean, can people trust those promises? The truth of the matter is the answer is no. A large size of the population do not trust. However, I mean, what is just what makes Peter Obi different is a lot of people believe he has the capacity, I mean, and he doesn't have corruption baggages, so to speak, hanging over him.
So he hasn't been tested in election in office just yet. Now, you have worked on presidential campaigns in Nigeria since 2011, and you were a polling unit officer in 2015. But you also worked in organizing young people into taking part in elections and voting. Just tell us why you think that the vote might turn out differently this year in terms of numbers, for instance.
Right. So in 2011, I was a polling unit officer because I was doing my 1 year mandatory youth service. And in 2015, I also have been working. So I've been working in and around elections, either as a volunteer or as a civil society person. I've monitored elections, those within the election cycles and outside it. But however, this year, according to the numbers, currently, according to the Nigeria Bureau of Statistics, the median age of Nigeria is 18. 18, that's the median age of over 200 million people.
So they can actually vote.
Exactly. However, there is a total voter registration, according to the electoral body, of about 93 million, 93.4 million, actually. Those are the people that can vote. And from the data from the electoral body, young people have the largest number. So young people between the ages of 18 and 34 make up 39.65%
of
the electorate that are registered to vote. And that looks like a game changer, even though it's not the first time young people would have that large chunk. However, I mean, going by the things that happened during and SARS, and
was a campaign against police brutality.
Yes.
You thinking that those things sort of galvanize the youth into looking very specifically at issues that concern them and that would make a better life for them?
Yes, I mean, because the NSAS protests gravitated into good governance, essentially. So they were asking that the government of the day take a decision to ban that, arm of the police. So I think that there has been a reawakening of young persons, and they are willing to go to the polls to make their choice, essentially.
And what do you think are the things that concern them the most? I mean, for instance, is it things like climate change, like the supply of electricity? You can see the end of the police brutality issue because that targeted very clearly young black people, young male Nigerians especially. But do you think that the other issues are things that would concern young voters as well?
Yes, very well. I mean, the default thing that has happened in the political space and that keeps happening, and it's still happening, is to divide the people. I mean, the political elites divided people around ethnic lines, religious lines, and so on and so forth. However, I think on a large scale, for these elections, a lot of people have been hampering on the capacity of whoever will be the president. But one thing I would also then like to add is that it's my hope, eventually, because a lot of people focus on the central, the national government, which is important, the office of the president. However, there are also subnational elections. There's the House of Assembly in states, that's the legislature. There are also state governors who more or less are like emperors, and they lack accountability on a large scale. But I think issues around electricity, I mean, because young people are vibrant, access to internet. You also remember that Twitter was banned in Nigeria.
Indeed.
So, yeah. So those are the things that have made young people to say, I mean, literally, enough is enough.
Thank you. That was the name of the organization that you worked with to galvanize the vote among young people. Adeolu, thank you very much. You're